Welcome to Product Launch Labs, a podcast for anyone with a passion for matching innovative solutions with real-world market problems. It doesn't matter if you are a part of a startup or a big company, we hope that this podcast is for you because each episode, a guest will join us to share stories from real-world product launches, including the triumphant highs and the pivot-inducing lows.
Okay, we've had a problem here.
3, 2.
This is Houston. Say again, please.
1, 0.
All jokes about challenges with product launches aside, we're excited to be sharing all of these lessons learned, these best practices from taking new products to market. So let's move on to this week's guest.
The way we look at the user journey of our drivers, it's a 7-stage process from actually finding a load to, again, completing the actual delivery and getting paid. It's a long process. And a lot of this is not automated. A lot of it is manual. There's still fax machine and phone calls. But in the first stage alone, you have drivers that spend 60 to 90 minutes every day looking for their next truckload. That is obviously a lot of time being wasted, not being used productively to find truckloads. And we said, okay, well, I think we can solve that one little problem.
Our guest today is Nader Bolotta. We're excited to have him. He is the co-founder and director of product management at FleetOps, where they are working on perfecting logistics for the $700 billion trucking industry. They do that by facilitating a digital freight marketplace. And Nader is passionate about shipping useful products that delight while inspiring people to do things that they never thought possible. He's worked in a variety of different areas: machine learning, SaaS, enterprise, social networking, web analytics, a variety of others. And last but not least, he is an angel investor in 3 fast-growing startups, and obviously has a lot of really excellent experience to share with us on our podcast, a busy guy. And so we really appreciate him making the time to participate. So welcome to the podcast, Nader.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Jacob. I'm excited to be here. I love talking about product management, and specifically, I know we're talking about product vision today. I can't tell you how important this topic is in, you know, how much of a critical role has helped me in establishing product strategy, raising money, and building out great products. So I'm excited here to talk about it.
As Nader mentioned there, our focus today is going to be on vision and how clarity of vision can have an influence on things like roadmap, empowerment of team members, and more. So it's going to be a great discussion. Hopefully everybody will enjoy it as much as I enjoyed chatting with Nader. Let's get started with the origin story. With every one of these episodes, it's always really nice to have something about the starting point, the epiphany, the big idea, whatever it was that got a company and their team members started. And we don't want to do anything different here, so let's hear about how FleetOps got its start.
There certainly wasn't one of those epiphany lightning moments, but what did happen was it was more of a slow hunch developing over a period of time. So my partner and co-founder, CEO of the company, Chris Atkinson, he was running a design firm and he was working, he built a product which was more around tracking truck movements. It was really like a trucking analytics product, and was really successful. And as he was building that business, which I wasn't really a part of at the time, as he was building that business, he was learning more about the logistics, the transportation industry, and specifically trucking. And one of the things that he uncovered early on was there isn't an easy way for a truck driver to go and find a truckload. So if you imagine all the trucks that you see on the road today, most of the drivers that you're seeing are independent owner operators. They're independent contractors effectively. And there wasn't a place where they can simply go look for a truckload and book it and then pick it up. And, you know, from end to end, from the time of actually finding a load to completing the load and being paid for it. And so this was actually a slow hunch that developed over time. And then it was once we decided to dive deep into this particular problem, we said, hey, this is a good problem to solve in the market. And as a product manager, of course, you know, one of the things that you want is a large problem in a very large market. And so the trucking space is a $700 billion space. There is no clear leader in the trucking space. There are some companies who have, you know, 20, 30% market share, but it isn't a market where somebody has 80% or 50%. There's still 40% of that market is unconquered. So those two factors, the fact that it was a problem that was unmet and it was a very large market, you know, the TAM, the total addressable market, was really big. So it was a matter of a few months, and we, you know, he asked me about my thoughts on that. We dove a little deeper into, we talked to drivers, we talked to people in the industry. And so we thought this was a good opportunity to build a company right now.
So FleetOps has a pretty classic beginning, right? Job to be done, in this case, finding truckloads. And with that job, Natter and his business partner began by analyzing everything they could about the job, the buyer, determining if there was an adequate market, and if there was an unmet need. So let's jump ahead a little bit in the story of FleetOps and talk a little bit about the tool that they decided to use to capture that first core job to be done and the analysis that went with it. We'll talk a little bit about, or rather Natter will talk a little bit about, the internal and external benefits of, one, getting really dedicated to a specific job and pain, and two, the clarity that comes through choosing a particular method for documenting that information. Don't get me wrong, there are a lot of great tools out there. We have a number that we like, but really what matters most is that FleetOps chose a tool, and that tool and the vision that it documented became a North Star for so many of the choices that they made, the way that they signaled things internally and externally, and the products that they've ended up releasing to the market are a reflection of all that clarity and vision.
The tool that I like using is the product vision board. The product vision board is a tool that was created by somebody named Roman Pickler. He is a product management guru, and it's almost like a lean canvas, a lean business model canvas, but with a lot of the product pieces there. And the reason I bring up that framework is it answers all the questions that you need. So it talks about your product vision, talks about your target market, the user's needs, what are the product's main features, business value, business goals, even like things of how to go to market and how to position yourself around the competition. So really the template that I had used to understand and be more specific about the product that we're going to build and even our product vision was to be able to answer those questions from that framework.
Okay. So this was a framework that you had used in prior experiences, found success with it. And as you were getting rolling and working with your co-founder, there was just sort of a handshake agreement. Hey, this is the way that we need to document these things because it will benefit us later. Is that about how
it works? Yeah, I mean, it serves two great purposes. Like if we talk about internally and externally. So internally, it's great because it documents, it codifies all the, I mean, of course, there's more information that you need than the framework that we can talk about a little later. But there's a lot more information that you might need to make some business decisions or product decisions. But generally speaking, it covers 80% of all the topics that you would need to cover. I mean, imagine it just like any business case template. So internally, it's great because, you know, if we can get alignment on, say, the product features, on the product vision, on the user's needs, you don't have to discuss that, or I mean, yes, you might have to negotiate or make changes in the future, but generally that should not change so much early on if you've done all the requisite research. Externally, it's amazing because one of the things, and you know, our CEOs happens to be amazing at this, we were able to answer all of our investor questions by using this very template. So for example, an investor would say, well, why do you think that your product is going to be better than anyone else's? You know, there's competing products in the market. We're not the first ones in this place. Well, we already know what our unfair advantage is. They might even ask like, okay, so what's the user's needs? Like, how do you know that a user have problems with this particular, or have issues with this particular problem? And we can document that, we can articulate this because we know the user's needs. Like we have these three user needs, which is around earnings, respect, and freedom. And this is obviously related to fleet ops. And so we're very sharp on the user needs. We know them really well. So again, just that framework just happens to work brilliantly because it serves an internal purpose, which is the communication that happens internally around a product vision, and even a product strategy, and externally when you're talking to investors and also partners. We, you know, our application has a lot of components to it, and we have a lot of APIs to different partners, different services, different technologies that add value. And so we still use that framework, that product vision board, to sell our ideas and acquire new partners.
There's obviously a lot to unpack there as it relates to this product vision board that Nada really likes from Roman Pickler. But as we think about what he shared there, it influenced everything from partnerships to roadmap and more. I want to jump a little bit into something that he didn't specifically say was the result of the vision board when we were talking in the interview, but I really suspect that this next topic, which is actually a focus on segmenting and targeting in the market, that their choices, the clarity they had in the segments that they aimed at, are really a result of the tools that they chose and their dedication to them, the clarity for what purpose they use them. So let's take a minute and listen in on the conversation that Nader and I had about segmenting and targeting for fleet ops.
Yeah, it's a good question. So we looked at the trucking space, and the trucking space, if you look at the transportation industry, it's huge. You can think of airplanes, trains, but we just looked into the trucking space. And then if you take the trucking space as its own segment of all over transportation, you can even, segment them even more into what types of trucks. So if you look on the road, you have, you know, large trucks like your 53 footers, you have your refrigerated van, your refrigerated trucks, which are the reefer trucks. And then you have like moving vans, like say U-Haul, you have those small trucks that you could rent from Hertz or Discount or Enterprise. When we looked at the market, we looked at who really moves truckloads on a regular basis. We looked at independent, like owner operators, and owner operators typically will, you know, most of them are driving reefers, so that's a refrigerator truck, or a 53 foot truck, so just a regular dry, what they call a dry van. And so we targeted those two truck types, reefer and van, because they represented a lot of the, when I talked to you earlier about the users or the need that was unmet, the drivers or the users that are looking for truckloads for 60 to 90 minutes a day, most of them were either driving a reefer or a dry van. So that's the first part. The second part, the second thing which was significant in terms of understanding our target market and why that was how big of a problem that it is for this particular market. So if you contrasting this, and we had our initial plan was to offer our solution to all types of trucks. But if you drive a LTL, which is less than truckload, a smaller truck, you don't really have the pain of spending that much time looking for a truckload every day. That pain of spending 60 to 90 minutes every day is felt the most by drivers of reefers and dry vans. And so that's how we pinpointed that target market. We said, we're gonna be very sharp about, we're gonna serve two truck types, reefers and dry vans. We obviously have a secondary market, which is on the other side getting shippers because we are a marketplace. But our initial target market was the independent owner operators of reefers and dry vans.
That's great. Thanks, Natter. You guys are obviously really clear on what part of the market you are aimed at, or at least you were at the beginning, and I'm assuming that's gotten even more clear and then expanded over time as you've introduced new things. But tell us a bit more about where that clarity came from.
Yeah, so that's a good question. So once we established this target market, and yes, we did have clarity, but the clarity, I mean, I'm telling you the clarity that happened after a few months of research, because we didn't have the clarity of targeting the reefer and dry vans early on. That clarity had to be established after digging through a lot of mud, going through a bunch of dead ends. And again, specifically just about, we were going to offer a solution to all truck types. And that just didn't make any sense. We knew we couldn't serve some of the markets.
So let's let those last comments from Natter be a word to the wise for all of us. He talked about where clarity came from, and the reality is he mentioned months of digging through the mud. And this speaks to whether you're at the beginning of a new venture and you're aligning around that original job, or if you're deeper into your experience and you're looking at new features or new products to add to your pre-existing portfolio, the result is still the same. If there's a temptation to skip some of the upfront analysis, don't do it. This is a great example of why. Yes, time to market is critical, and perhaps there are times where the risk makes sense, but by and large, even if it's just a couple of months, that upfront analysis will change everything about, just like Natter's been talking about internal communication, external communication, feature decisions, prioritization, whether you've got the right minimum viable product, if you're over-engineering, under-engineering, all of that comes down to the work that they did up front. And as we get deeper into this episode, we're going to talk about some other themes with jobs to be done and the way those core needs of their buyers play a role. All of that can be traced back to that original clarity that came through awareness of pains that their users experience, the jobs that they're targeting, and the analysis that they did to create that clarity. On that note, let's move along to the next component of the interview, talking about themes, jobs to be done, and themes of what matters most to users. Let's listen in as Natter talks about the three core themes that matter most to their customers in the trucking industry. Really a compelling example of how those themes guide the vision for fleet ops at every turn.
Can I ask, those three that you just listed, earnings, respect, and freedom, I think it's a particular challenge for any organization that's entertaining launching a new product, whether they're going to be a new entity or an existing company who's going to launch a new product into a new market. You, going through research, you acquire so much information, but the power to distill that into something clear and taking a little bit more time up front, I love the phrase you used, digging through mud. I'd love to have more people really understand that crafting clear vision is all about digging through or slogging through the mud. Can you use that idea of how did you refine all the information that you found into those three words and what do they mean? And let's just use that as an example that people could follow.
Yeah, so the user needs that we've determined for our application is there's three things that, so focusing on the truck driver, and we're customer obsessed on our truck drivers. There's three primary needs that a truck driver needs to be met. Number one is they want to make money. So that's around earnings. So, you know, usually they're the primary source of income for their entire households. They spend a lot of time negotiating, faxing, getting load details, often getting their family members to help. And obviously they want to make more money. So that's the first reason. That's the first user need is around earning, making money. The second is around respect. And truck drivers are a heavily marginalized group of people. They are disrespected. I mean, just colloquially, oftentimes when people warn young kids about not completing high school, not going to college or university, they'll say, well, what do you want to do? You want to just become a truck driver or a garbage man? It's that old thinking that makes them so marginalized. And even in the market, we're surprised just how often they're disrespected by brokers, by shippers. And we felt that was an important vector to attack, is the getting drivers' respect. The third was around freedom. You know, one of the big reasons why drivers get into this industry in the first place is being behind the wheel of a truck. And they don't have a boss. They go wherever they want to. And so they want to have that freedom. And so those are the three user needs: earnings, respect, and freedom. Now, just going down another level deeper into how we got this, how we arrived at these user needs. Well, we talked to a number of drivers. I mean, I think we had some deep discussions with like 12 drivers initially. We obviously had read a lot from, you know, some publications, media on the internet. We talked to some trucking companies as well. And what we found were these three user needs. You know, we found these three themes. It was, I want to make money. I want to work with a company that really respects me. I mean, so much so that drivers, a lot of them don't even get paid on time. They might not even get paid in full, and they might not even get paid at all. Funny enough, there's a couple of YouTube videos where a driver takes a gigantic load of sand and dumps it right in front of a corporate office because they didn't pay them. And so they want more respect. So we were able to parse that from our discussions. And then when we asked them about why they chose to be a driver instead of any other industry, now we don't say, hey, well, why did you become a driver? Why did you choose to become a driver instead of working at SpaceX? We ask questions around, you know, their choice of being a driver versus other horizontal vocations, such as being in construction. And it came back that they really want freedom. So we arrive at these user needs from talking to a lot of drivers, going deep into what they say, and then parsing what they say into themes. And then obviously we backed that up with market research, and that means we talk to the trucking companies, and then we read a lot. So that's how we arrived at it.
It's amazing how clear, I love the word you used around themes. Yeah. Taking all this research and boiling it into these buckets. And it wasn't like you started with the buckets in mind. You weren't trying to force fit research. I think sometimes, especially those opportunities that begin based on a contract or that begin based on one executive sort of gut, you go and you look for research to validate what you want to hear, not just to summarize what you do find. And if you take that, I mean, I think I'm probably guilty of it. I don't think I've actually said it to my 6-year-old or my 2-year-old that what do you want to be, a trucker? I don't think I've used that phrase, but I do think that we all carry this negative connotation. But really, why did they do it? They want to be a successful business owner that has the freedom to operate, the respect of being a successful business owner. And if you take this, I'm a truck driver out, and you were to say to somebody, oh, hey, come chat with this successful business owner that has complete control of their own time, manages their earnings, is looking to scale. Well, that's going to resonate with any entrepreneur, regardless of the category that they work in. So really fascinating. And so then you picked up and took these three core needs: earnings, respect, and freedom. And that, it sounds like it almost became like a bit of a rallying cry that probably enabled pretty simple or easy or immediate outcomes with the truckers that you were trying to target. How did that go?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, understanding the user needs helps us in so much ways, so many ways. So number, like a quick example is, it helps us in terms of how we market, how we message and how we communicate to our users, our customers. So our copy, the copy that we use will likely be targeting, when we're selling a new feature, as an example, maybe I'll be more specific. When we're selling a new feature and we do an education campaign around this feature, we don't say, hey, this serves your user need of earnings. We don't talk about this, but we might say, hey, this is a great way we found after launching this to a small group of drivers, we found that they've been earning 10% more. Or we say, hey, we launched this feature where instead of you having to call the broker, we'll get the broker to call you. That's around respect. So we're always using these to communicate and how we communicate to externally to our users and also our partners. But we also use it internally. So I'll give you an example, the theme or the user need of respect. As we were building out our product and as we were building out a roadmap, we realized sometime last year that we didn't really focus on this particular user need a lot. And so we were able to make changes in our roadmap and obviously the prioritization of some of the features to address more, to build features that actually address that user need. So it works externally and it works internally because we always know why we're building a particular feature and what its purpose is. And it should either help the drivers earn more money, it should help the drivers get more respect, feel less marginalized, and it should make the drivers have more freedom.
And it sounds like you guys look to create balance. Is that right? In your roadmap, you're looking for balance across all three of those needs?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would say that we most of our roadmap is probably is more on the earnings part for sure. That's the primary driver why someone would want to use your service. I mean, we can certainly build the most customer friendly application that makes no money, but it's nice to them and it sends them nice messages and that gives a respect, but obviously it doesn't actually pay the bills. So it is a nice balance. It's certainly not equitable. It's not 33% earnings, 33% respect, and 33% freedom. But there's definitely a good balance of, you know, when I look across our app, I can see the features that this feature actually, you know, it's not really going to drive revenue directly, but it is going to make the drivers feel better about using the application. And so that's the difference.
So I want to go back to the product vision board, this sure. tool that you mentioned from Roman Pickler. So a couple of the things that I think you mentioned from the board focus on things like how you measure the success of go-to-market in the future. Maybe there's some aspects of the business case that were created up front. Is that product vision board one that you go back to as a way of monitoring the success of new feature launches? And if so, how do you do that?
Well, in the product vision board, there is a section that, and if you look at, by the way, just a bit of a caveat here. If you look at Roman Pickler's product vision board, if you just Google that, you'll see that his I use the extendable one or the extended one, I should say. Because it has a lot of the business case. I actually combine the product vision board and the business case because it actually makes sense. They complement each other. But one of the things that we try to establish is in a product vision board, we do try to establish the business goals or problems that we want to solve. So this is really, you know, answering the question of like, why is it worthwhile for our company to be investing in this particular product? What are the desired business benefits? And as an example, it could be increasing revenue, entering a new market. It could be reducing cost, developing a brand, creating a self-service site to reduce customer support costs, for example. That's a business problem we want to solve. And in that, you know, after you understand the business goals and the business problems, you can really establish your goals. And that's around more, you know, that's like your business goals with some specific KPIs. So one could be, we want to reduce support costs by $30,000 this quarter. So if you're, I once worked for a company called Pure Energies, which we were acquired by NRG. We had sky high support costs. And that was largely because we didn't have a customer portal. So we didn't have a self-service site where customers can review their energy usage. This is an energy company. They couldn't review their energy usage. There wasn't an FAQ. And once we built that self-service site, we reduced support costs. I don't remember the number, but significantly, because users didn't have to call in and we didn't have somebody on the phone. We didn't have to have a person supporting them on the phone. We can just have them all on the web, obviously getting the information you need. Yeah, so KPIs are part of the vision board that I use. I use the extended one. And the product vision board, it is not written in stone. You know, maybe your vision never changes, your product, your vision or your company vision never changes, but you know, our world is ever changing. And so you have to be able to adapt to it. And it serves more as a strong guideline as to what your product strategy should be. But there are times where you're going to have to throw away some of your strategy. Your competition even changes because somebody went out of business or somebody was acquired or somebody had raised a lot of money. In our world, one of our big competitors, Uber Freight. Well, Uber Freight, you know, this is say pre-pandemic because they've had a hard time. They have a hard time recently, but pre-pandemic, they were getting huge cash investments from their parent company, Uber. Uber was making a gigantic investment in Uber Freight every single quarter. And you can see that by the number of resources they had, the product launches, and also just some of like their general pronouncements around the success of the product. So Uber Freight as a competitor, they were certainly a competitor to us. Then they became a much bigger competitor and a much bigger concern. So in terms of the product vision board, you change, you adjust how you view your competition when these things happen.
Hearing you talk about Uber Freight and the fact that there weren't significant players with large market share up front, even just the having a North Star like your vision that you had, it's so critical because I think there's a temptation to have a knee-jerk response when big names get involved, when large companies with deeper pockets dive into the space, because there will be a temptation to get distracted from your vision. And the minute you do that, you lose a hold of exactly what problems you're solving, because you might get into a tit for tat, feature for feature type comparison, when it might actually not be something that was important based on your targets, your specific guidelines. So it makes sense why that would be so important. So as you and your team were going forward, obviously you've got these competing needs. There's low level, I'm going to call them low level maintenance type questions. They're not necessarily defects, but just small change requests or interesting little things that you could do versus larger new features that you can prioritize. We work with clients a lot on the balance of how just maintaining versus introducing new features that create new value. How have you used vision to manage the balance of those things?
Yeah, so you know, that's a good question you ask. Now, just to be clear, the product vision board is a really a high level framework for product strategy. This is the way I see it and the way that Roman Pickler would describe it. What you're asking about, I think, is more around the roadmap. The product vision board does heavily inform the roadmap. You should be making decisions on your roadmap based on what you've articulated in your product vision board. And so the question around what feature you want to build, certainly you will use, if you made a good product vision board, if you have a great product vision, you will use the product vision board the product vision board. It'll help you guide everyone involved, including product development, marketing, sales, and making any product a success. But very importantly, it helps inform the roadmap. So when, you know, on when decisions need to be made.
Okay, so now it's time for us to get to the last topic that Nader and I got to delve into during the interview. This was a discussion that focused even deeper on the way that their vision and the use of that vision board played a role in the interactions between various team members, even if they were a part of different functions, and the way they think about or stay motivated around this idea of getting new products to market. So let's listen in on that discussion.
Okay, so one of the things that we like to do at FleetOps, this might be a little bit unusual, but the quality of our decisions that we make is the resulting choices or decisions that come out is usually reflective of the diversity in the room itself. And diversity, I'm not talking about, you know, I'm not talking about ethnicities and genders. I'm not talking about that kind of diversity. I'm talking about more diversity of role. It's something that I actually never thought would be because, so just a quick example. A lot of times when we are approaching a particular problem, when we are at a stage of, well, you know, as a product manager, you probably have a few stages from the time that you identify a problem to the time that you actually launch that. So if you go through the software development lifecycle flowchart, you probably have at some point there's okay, you understand this is a problem. You see it in data, you see it from qualitative analysis, that is like surveys, feedback, talking to customers directly, if this is indeed a problem that needs to be solved. And so that's maybe the discovery process. When at the stage where I'm identifying or I've identified this is actually a problem, I try to bring engineering, I try to bring design and other product managers, and sometimes even our CEO. Now we're a smaller company, so we don't have a large team. And I try to bring in, try to get a variety of roles in the room to help me color what a solution could be. And that's been helpful in a lot of ways, because engineering might tell you early on, we just can't solve this problem because it requires infrastructure changes, or it requires a major change in our architecture, or it requires a huge investment in technology, or we need a new, you know, DevOps resource. So they can help you, understand how big of a problem this is solved very early on before you invest too much of your time designing, you know, going through an MVP process. So that's an example. We also have design, which can, you know, as you're thinking of what could, you know, now you understand the problem, what is a requirements or solution look like? Well, design can help you very early on. You know, we have some amazing designers at Fleet Ops, and they're able to articulate or influence, you know, that solution. How is it going to look, and how can it be done without making major changes to the user interface? Or to even say, you know what, it'll be very hard to do this because we have all these other designs or updated designs or updated UI that's coming out, and we should wait for that. So the quality of our decisions is really reflected by the people in the room at the time of actually going through solutioning. So that's the first thing. And generally speaking, product managers are responsible for the problem, and product managers and design, I would say, are responsible for the problem. The solution is really around the engineers. Now we tell we can tell engineering or development, whatever you might want to call it, here's the problem that we have. This is what the requirements are, and then, you know, we leave it to them to build it. We won't tell them, hey, you should use AWS instead of this, or this is how you should code it, or this is the order that you should build it. So we don't really dictate those kind of things. We have that line.
That's great. Not only does all of that effort enhance the quality of the decision making, but all that buy-in you get from those diverse functional roles, it plays a significant role in how they help implement it, because they feel like they've had a voice. They've bought in early on. And then you take the fact that not only were they bought in, but if they see the connectivity between that feature and earnings or freedom or respect, now as a creative person, either a developer or a design person, now I feel inspired because I'm making a difference in the life of a client, which is really why we all do this in the first place, right? Because we like solving problems and meeting unmet jobs, helping them do these jobs that they have to do. So
that's an important point, actually, because I neglected to mention it. I have found that the quality of the products that I've built, there is a significant correlation between how early on you involve different stakeholders, such as engineering, design, sales, especially engineering. When they believe in what they're doing, you know, the quality of the product, the inspiration behind it, helps them actually, you know, build something that's more useful and even more usable, I found, versus maybe the old way of thinking about product management and thinking about building software was product manager responsible for the problem. We give you a list of tasks, just do them. We're not going to tell you the why why we think this is important. And then you have engineers who are trained to be more task oriented. Now there are engineers and developers who I've met that say, I don't want to know the whole story. Just tell me what I need to do and I'll just build that. But I think that's actually few and far between. The people at FleetOps especially are really inspired by the work that we do. And you know, that's one of the reasons why we have a great product, is because we do explain to them early on, as part of this, you know, as we do discovery, we explain to them, what is the user problem that we want to solve? Why is this significant? And we give them some of the data points, some of the, you know, the quantifiable measurements as to why that is. And we also explain to them what the business goal, what is the business problem that we're going to solve.
Okay, that brings us to the end of this episode of Product Launch Labs. We are thrilled you joined us. A huge thank you to Nader for being here today and for chatting with me. Really, really appreciate it. Nader, if people would like to connect with you, chat with you, follow up on anything from our episode, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, people can connect with me on LinkedIn. It's probably the best way. My profile is open, so just search for Nader Balata, Nader, last name Balata, Balata. I'm happy to answer any questions there. My Twitter, if you want to follow me on Twitter, though I don't tweet much these days, but it is just my first name, last name. So Nader Balata.
Excellent. Well, thank you again. Really enjoyed having you here on the podcast. All right, until our next episode, we really appreciate everybody joining us. My name is Jacob Hansen with Venturis Partners, and we are a product strategy consultancy, also the sponsor of this podcast, and we absolutely love what we do in the world of product. We really enjoy the chance to record these podcasts. If you have any feedback for us, we'd love to hear it. You can go to venturispartners.com. Go to the resources tab and find the appropriate episode. We'd love to hear from you. So until next time, may your products that are launched find all the buyers and users that you're looking for. We hope products are being adopted, organizations are growing, and that new projects are getting the green light as you are pitching them to investors, executives, etc. We look forward to catching up with you next time.